morning. Some years ago, before me or my brother were born, my parents, the two of them, were on holiday, and they decided to climb Cadair Idris, which is a mountain in Snowdonia in Wales. And my mum, oddly enough, grew up doing lots of walks and mountain climbing, things like that. It was something that her parents were very interested in and keen on. For some reason, they set about this walk in a not very prepared fashion. They hadn't really taken the right kind of equipment. They're just in shorts and trainers and didn't really have anything for if the weather got worse. And their guide and their instruction for this walk was a page which they had ripped out of the Reader's Digest Book of Good Walks. So they set off to go and to climb this mountain. And as they began, it started on a clear day, on a fine day, and all started very well for them. But as they went up the mountain, it seemed as though the clouds came down. And by the time they reached the top of the mountain, they found themselves in thick cloud. And they started to make their journey down the mountain with very poor visibility, not being able to see terribly far at all. But of course, they still had their Reader's Digest page from the Book of Good Walks, because it gave them instructions to work their way down the mountain. And as they went along, they started their journey down, and they came to the next instruction was to turn left at the pile of stones. And as they went along their path, they found a small mound of stones and a path that led off to the left. And so they said, right, well, here we go. We're following the instructions. It says turn left at the pile of stones. Here's the pile of stones, and here's the left turn. And just as they're about to head down that way, a man came along, almost appeared out of the thick fog that they were walking in. And he said, I don't think you want to go that way. And they said, well, we're following our instructions. It says turn left at the pile of stones. Here's the pile of stones, and it says turn left. And he says, I think it means the pile of stones a bit further on. You'll find another one. And he said, you don't want to go that way. It's very steep down there. And before they really could say thank you, he walked on and gone off into the fog. And they carried on along the path. They took his advice, went along the path, and shortly further down found a larger pile of stones and another left turn. They made their way safely down the mountain. And the next day, when they were looking at some of the news and some of the local news, they found that two other people who'd been walking that way had gone the wrong way and had fallen walking on a steep path and had to be rescued. For my parents, they'd say that's the closest experience they've ever had of meeting an angel. They can't say exactly who it was or what it was, but certainly it seemed to them that God sent a messenger just at the right time, in the right place, when they very much needed it. The passage that we're going to really be looking at today is just one verse from Hebrews 13:2. We'll come along to Genesis 18 later. Hebrews 13 verse 2 says, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. And I want to look at basically three things. Think about angels and what are they? Because we can sometimes get a bit caught up with what angels are really about. And we think about fluffy things and wings and harps and clouds and stuff like that. So what are we really talking about when it's talking about showing hospitality to angels? Why is it saying to show hospitality to strangers? And how should we show that hospitality? Because Hebrews 13 talks about angels. It's saying people have shown hospitality to angels without even knowing it. And often, you've probably heard me talk before when we've come to talking about angels. So often it seems when angels appear, the first thing they say to someone is, do not be afraid. Yeah, so for me, I kind of read from that that it seems that when angels appear, something about their appearance would seem to be somewhat scary. If the first thing they have to say when they appear is, do not be afraid. And so there seems to be something about angels. When they appear, it's very clear that they're angels, and they're usually coming to give some kind of significant and important message. And to be honest, that's often, when I think about angels, that's usually the kind of thing I'm thinking about. Scary and significant messages, and that's as far as it goes. But it would also seem, from what we've already read in Genesis 18, that God can appear, angels can appear, in a very different way. That angels are able to appear in human form, and they may or may not be recognised. And Judges 13, you might like to turn to it, it's page 256 in the church Bibles. Judges 13, I think, gives an interesting story, and in some ways quite a humorous story, about just something of that happening. Because in Judges 13, from verse 2, we read this. A certain man of Zorah, named Manoah, from the clan of the Danites, had a wife who was childless and able to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son." And he goes on to give us some more details. But in verse 6, we then read that the woman went to her husband and told him, "A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God, very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, 'You'll become pregnant and have a son.'" And already we've got this sense here, is there's a slight ambiguity about who this person was. He looked like an angel. He looked something, there was something different about him, but she doesn't seem to be quite sure exactly. And I didn't ask him his name or where he'd come from, what's going on. Now, this lady's husband, Manoah, seems to doubt a little bit what his wife's telling him. So we get to verse 8, and Manoah prays to the Lord very diplomatically. "Pardon your servant, Lord, I beg you to let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born." If you read the bit I skipped out, he did actually already explain how to bring up the boy, but the man doesn't seem to be willing to take the message from his wife. We'll carry on and see what happens next. "God heard Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman while she was out in the field, but her husband Manoah was not with her. The woman hurried to tell her husband, 'He's here, the man who appeared to me the other day.' Manoah got up and followed his wife, and when they came back to the man, he said, 'Are you the man who talked to my wife?'" It seems like Manoah doesn't seem to quite cotton on who this is. It seems to be a level of spiritual insight that perhaps his wife has that maybe he's lacking in. They go on, and this conversation carries on, and there's a nice bit where Manoah says, verse 17, he says, "What's your name?" And he replies in verse 18, "Why do you ask my name? It's beyond understanding." And Manoah doesn't seem to quite clock still what's going on. Because finally, as we come towards the end of this, in verse 19, Manoah takes an offering. Takes a young goat together with a grain offering and sacrificed it on a rock to the Lord. And the Lord did an amazing thing while Manoah and his wife watched. As the flame blazed up from the altar towards heaven, the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame. Seeing this, Manoah and his wife fell with their faces to the ground. When the angel of the Lord did not show himself again to Manoah and his wife, Manoah realized that it was the angel of the Lord. "We are doomed to die," he said to his wife. "We have seen God." And his wife, who once again seems to have a little bit more spiritual insight, says, "If the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or told us this." It seems that angels are able to appear and to some extent look quite in human form, and there seems to be a difference in the level of spiritual insight as to who is able to kind of spot who they are and what's really going on. So when Hebrews 13 talks about entertaining angels and showing hospitality to angels and without even being aware, it's saying that's exactly what could go on. Angels in the Bible are God's messengers. They bring messages from God. They're still God's messengers today. They're still active in the world today. And what Hebrews 13 is describing, we can take seriously. So when it says that we should be welcoming strangers, part of the reason why is exactly because of what it says. Because who knows, maybe you'll entertain an angel without even knowing it. And the fact is, you've got to entertain strangers if you ever want to have the opportunity to do that. Because the people you know, are not angels. So if you ever want to have that kind of experience, you're going to have to go out of your way and find some strangers. Because it ain't going to be the people you already know. But there's something more in here. I mean, maybe that's a sense of a spiritual desire for you that you might look to seek out and see how you might meet God in the people you don't yet know. But there's more going on to this than just that. There's more blessing to be found. In Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58 verse 6 says this. "Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? Is this not the kind of worship I look for?" God's saying. "Is this not the kind of lifestyle I look for if you're going to be following me?" And says some words that we may be very familiar with from the prophets. "To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free." Some words that we might be very familiar with about acting justly. It goes on in the next verse to say, "Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter?" It's actually part of what God was looking for from his people. Part of what God looks for in us, his people, is to be those who show hospitality to those in need, providing food to the hungry, shelter for those who are wandering, for those we don't know, for the stranger. That's what God asks of his people, and what he asks of us. But in the very next verse, he goes on to say, this is what's going to happen if you do these things. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear, and your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. That actually, as you go and do these things, as you go and live in this way, as you go and show this kind of welcome and this hospitality, and you live in this just way to those who are in need, you will know me more. You will know my glory right with you. My glory is your rear guard, as your protection. The very next verse goes on to say, then you will call and the Lord will answer. That as you go and you do these things, you'll know me more. You will call to me and you will know my voice. You'll hear what it is I'm saying. That actually, going and living in these ways, we come and we find that we know God more. And perhaps you've experienced something of that. Perhaps you already know something of that in your life. That actually, as you have gone to those in need, as you've welcomed others, as you seek to care for those who are struggling, who are suffering, actually you find that you've been blessed. Actually, you find that you've come to know God more. It's certainly what I hear as I talk to people who've been involved in things like the night shelter or in food bank. Actually, they've sought to go and bless others, but found that actually they have been blessed sometimes much more than they feel they've done. It's certainly been my experience in the 2 times that we've been to Uganda with a group of young people, that we sought to go there to serve and to be a blessing to others, but found that through the course of that, we've met God and been blessed hugely. If you were here for Leah Hardy's baptism last year and heard her testimony, you would have heard of how as we went and we sought to serve others, as we met those who were strangers to us, how God spoke to Leah, even where we couldn't speak the same language, how God spoke through a young woman and her worship and her passion, and how that spoke to Leah. Actually, as we go and we do these things, as we welcome the stranger, it's not just in the kind of vain hope that one day you might come across an angel, but actually we find we meet with God, we know him more, and he blesses us. But Hebrews 13 verse 2 isn't just saying show hospitality to strangers because you'll receive good things. Actually, there were some very practical reasons that the writer of the Hebrews is saying to the early church, welcome strangers. Because actually it was vital for the early church, for the New Testament church, because they didn't have churches. They were meeting in people's homes. They were meeting in one another's homes. So they had to be willing to invite people in, to let people into their homes who were strangers, because that's how the church was working. Because actually, as people travelled around, as Christians travelled from one part to another, they relied on people who would welcome them in. As Christians were fleeing from persecution, they were dependent upon other believers in other parts of the world who would be willing to welcome them in and open their homes to them. Actually, this showing hospitality to strangers was something that the church relied upon, that it depended upon. And it remains something that's important to us today. Because today, so often what people struggle with is a lack of community, is of feeling lonely and isolated. And here as the church, we are a community, we are a family, we're a place of belonging. And actually, as we open our doors, open our lives, open our homes to others, we enable them to come into that and to find belonging as part of the family of God. Actually, for us today, it remains just as important for the church to show hospitality to strangers. This showing hospitality and welcome to the stranger was important for the church then because Roman society was still quite a mobile society. People moved around a fair amount. Just as we see today, we're a mobile society and people move around. Particularly in Slough, we see people come and go all the time. We see it in the life of our church. People come and go all the time. Some of you have been here for a very long time and you're appreciated. But we need to recognise too that we live in a part of the world where people are coming and going. And so actually, for our sakes and for the sake of the church, we need to welcome those who we don't know. Because that's part of our life, part of being in this town, part of who we are as a church. That actually, we need to see that those who we don't know, the strangers, are people we can get to know. It's part of the reason that we do name badges now on the first Sunday of every month. Because we're on this continual cycle, recognising there's always new people around and new people to get to know. And it's just an easy and simple way of beginning to learn a few names and easy opportunities to introduce yourself and to say hello or to pick up a name that you didn't already know. Those who are strangers, who are part of this church, don't let them remain that way. Whether you think you've seen them around for a long time and maybe they've been a regular, or whether you've never seen them before, take the opportunity to get to know and to build relationship. We welcome strangers, not just that we might be blessed, we might meet God, but actually that the church might grow. It's the biblical way of growing the church, to show hospitality to strangers. So we thought about angels, what they are, and why we might welcome strangers, but how should we show that kind of hospitality? And this is where we come to Genesis 18. In Abraham's experience, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing by. We're let in verse 1 as to this is God appearing to him, but it seems like Abraham didn't really know what was going on. All he sees is three men standing nearby. And there's a huge amount of discussion about the identity of these three figures and who they were, and is this kind of a biblical example of the Trinity and what's going on here. And it gets more complicated as you go through the rest of 18, because it seems to go from three down to being one, and you're not quite sure what happens to the other two. And all of that, it gets a little bit complicated, and this was something that they made me write an essay on, one of my first essays at Bible college. So I won't bore you with that. I read back through it and decided that I didn't agree with myself anymore, so that's always quite interesting too. But it seems a bit unclear as to who these people are, and certainly seems unclear at what point Abraham seems to figure out what's going on. And we'd like the answers and like to know, and of course the essay that I was given was to try and work out the answers, but it's a bit unclear. Perhaps exactly like it was for my parents on that mountain. It's a bit unclear who this person was and where they'd come from and where they went. Perhaps like sometimes it is for us, so often unclear as to the identity. But God appears to Abraham, and he seems at first to not really know what's going on. But as we picked up helpfully in Christine's kind of alternative versions, what Abraham did when he saw these three visitors was he hurried to go and meet them. He hurried off to go and meet them. And actually that hurrying carries on, verse 6 to 7. He hurried into the tent, and then he runs to the herd to go and get a calf. It's him who goes and selects a calf. He's rushing and hurrying around. There's a real sense that the hospitality he's showing is something that he's doing urgently. He's got a real urgent need to go and show this hospitality. He doesn't wait, or he doesn't stand back. He doesn't kind of see, are these three visitors just passing by, or do they want to stop here? He doesn't kind of make them sit around while he goes off and makes preparations for hours. He's got a sense of rush and urgency about what he is doing. He's got a real urgent desire. And as I thought about this, and I thought about this for myself, I recognise that in showing hospitality, I so often don't have the same sense of urgency. Lunch takes as long as lunch does to cook. You can't speed up a roast dinner without, you know, giving people food poisoning. But actually, it's very easy, isn't it, to think, oh, I must have those people over. Or I really should do that. Or I haven't spoken to that person in a while. Or I should go and say hello to that person who's new. And it's so easy, isn't it, for other things to then crowd in. To forget, to put it off, to delay. And there's this real sense from Abraham of this urgency about what he's doing. That actually this was something important. This was something to be done quickly. This was something to be done urgently. It wasn't just something that he took urgently, but it's something that he did humbly. We've often talked about it, we'd be familiar with the story of the prodigal son. And when the prodigal son returns to his father, the father runs, and much is made of the fact that the father runs to his son, and how undignified it would be for the father in the story of the prodigal son to be running. A man of wealth, a man of status, a landowner, would not run. It was undignified for him to do that. And it's just the same for Abraham. If you read in chapter, I think it's 14, verse 4, Abraham's got 400 servants at this point. Abraham's got plenty of people he could have sent to do the running for him. This is a man of authority and a status now. And it's him who does the rushing around to go and show this hospitality and this welcome. He goes and he serves himself. He's the one rushing around. Yes, he's asking other people to be involved. He's not doing it all on his own. But he's going and serving himself. He's the one who brings them curds and milk. He's the one who stands near them under a tree. He's the one who comes and humbly serves them. He doesn't think that he's too good, too important to serve others in very practical ways. And equally, he doesn't think that he's too old. He's 99, remember, doing this running around. He hasn't decided he's too old and it's somebody else's job. He humbly serves. And it's easy, perhaps, sometimes for us to make excuses, isn't it? To leave this kind of hospitality and this welcome to somebody else. Sometimes there are genuine excuses, genuine reasons, but other times we make excuses as to why we can't and why we leave it to someone else. The whole point of the course that Elsie's been running and encouraging everybody in the church to be involved is everybody welcome. The whole point is that everybody can be involved in welcome. And if you haven't yet had a chance to be involved in that, I'd really encourage you to talk to Elsie, who is hiding.
She's in creche.
She's in creche. Thank you. That's why I can't see her. Really encourage you to chat with Elsie and to find an opportunity to be involved in that and to learn more about how we can all be involved in welcome in the life of our church. Hospitality is something that we can all do. And maybe in very practical ways, if you'd like to be involved in hospitality in food and the kind of food that we do together as the life of the church, there's a few people who do a lot. And if you're into cooking and food and would love to show hospitality in that way, then do come have a chat with me or with Elsie, because we'd love to connect you and get you involved in some of what goes on, whether it's just being part of teas and coffees on a Sunday morning or when we do bigger meals and show hospitality to others. There's lots of opportunities to be involved. Abraham humbly serves. He also serves enormously generously. Verse 6 and 7, quick, he says to Sarah, get 3 seahs of the finest flour. And if you look in, you may have a footnote in your Bible that says how much that is, that's about 16 kilograms of flour. I don't know how many guests he thought there were, but he instructs his wife to take 16 kilograms of flour and bake bread with it. He seems pretty generous. It's a meal I'd happily be a part of. And then he runs off and he goes to get the finest calf. He goes and finds a choice, tender calf. This is a generous and abundant serving that he's doing. And there's a certain irony in what he does, because taking that Abraham hasn't clocked who these visitors really are, that actually the things that he goes and offers, getting the finest flour and getting a choice calf without blemish, is actually an offering that would have been acceptable to bring to God. And there's this little irony that we get to enjoy as the ones reading it, that here he is rushing around bringing this hugely generous offering, and he doesn't clock that actually the one he's bringing it to is God. And yet the offering he brings is something that would be acceptable to the Lord, the finest flour, choice calf without blemish. It's as though a long time before it was written, he's caught on to what it says in Colossians 3. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord. Not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. It's as though Abraham already got it without needing to read it, written by Paul. But actually, the kind of generous service that we're called to is an offering that the people we meet, it is Christ who we are serving. And Abraham got to experience that himself. We're to serve urgently, humbly, and generously. But this humble and generous service of Abraham, as we've already noted, points us something towards what the father in the story of the prodigal son does. that is the father who runs out to meet the prodigal son as he returns to him. It's the father who throws a party when his son's return. He goes and kills a fattened calf and throws this lavish celebration that his son has come back to him. The son who was lost has been found. The son, as though he was dead, is now alive again. It points us to something of what the Father has done for us. And reminds us that when we talk about doing these things and being blessed, we don't do these things so that we might be blessed. Because actually God has already done abundantly more for us than we might ever serve him or others with. That God has done much more for us than kill the fattened calf. That God has sent his son for us, that he might welcome us into his family. That we're told that actually when just one person turns to him, that when one person turns as the prodigal son did and comes back to the father, that heaven rejoices, that there's a party in heaven, that it's as though they're already killing the calf in heaven to celebrate and to rejoice that one has come back into his family. That God has already done far more for us than we could ever do for him. That we don't do this to be blessed, we do this because we have already been blessed. Welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. We're blessed to be a blessing. And so we know how to show hospitality, that we're to do it urgently, to do it humbly, and to do it generously. We know why welcome strangers, that as we do that, we will be blessed, that we'll come to know God more as we go about it. That actually, it's not just about us, it's for the growth and the good of the church. And who knows? Maybe as you go and welcome strangers, you might even come across angels. What angels may you entertain without even being aware? Christine's going to lead us as we reflect and respond to that.